Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Thoughts of a Random Citizen. This is actually an episode that you might have already heard before if you've been a listener from the start. This is because we are currently in the process of repurposing all of our old podcast episodes and cleaning up the entire feed. These changes will allow listeners to enjoy the best episodes and highlight the most insightful content. Now, if you're newer to this podcast and wondering where to find or why you can't find season 1 and 2, don't worry. They'll eventually be available on our website, torqueunited.com, after we do some fun, dare I say, innovative things with them. But stay tuned for that. In the meantime, we plan to release rewinds every other week to repurpose older podcast episodes. And this will simply just allow listeners to revisit classic content from insightful and featured guests and enjoy it in a new light at a different time in their life to hopefully provide a new perspective. At the end of the day, it's our intention to bring the best possible content to you. So enjoy this repurposed rewind. But at the end of the day, sticks and stones, people, break your bones, but words shouldn't really hurt you.
I'm the kind of person who really likes to get to the bottom of things.
Yeah.
And I don't let my own belief system get in the way of fact.
It's one of the most important financial centers in the world, but in terms of freedom of speech, expression, and civil liberties, it's a dictatorship.
All right, and thank you everyone for tuning in to another episode of Thoughts of a Random Citizen. Today, I have an amazing interview with Chris Odegaard. If you're kind of tired or exhausted or emotionally damaged from the stock market ups and downs, maybe you're looking for passive income and not sure where to start, I'll just say now, this conversation with Chris is the place to start. I pound Chris with a bunch of little questions, and he knocks them out of the park with amazing insight in how to invest in low-risk assets that yield solid returns. He's living proof that these strategies work, and for any who want to continue to invest but, again, can't stomach that current market volatility, this episode should be a breath of fresh air for you. Chris has said he allocates maybe 1% of his portfolio into the stock market. And even though I'm about the exact opposite of that, it just goes to show that when you hear investments, it doesn't only mean traditional ETFs, stocks, and bonds. It kind of goes back to what Matthew McConaughey said in Wolf of Wall Street.
It's all a fugazi. You know what a fugazi is?
Fugazi. It's a fake.
Yeah, fugazi, fugazi. It's a wazi, it's a woozy, it's a fairy dust. It doesn't exist. It's never landed. It is no matter. It's not on the elemental chart. It's not fucking real.
Right.
All right. Right. Stay with me.
Mm-hmm.
So if you got a client who bought stock at 8 mm-hmm. and it now sits at 16 and he's all fucking happy, he wants to cash in, liquidate, take his fucking money and run home, you don't let him do that.
Okay.
Because that would make it real.
Right.
Now, what do? You get another brilliant idea, mm-hmm. a special idea. Another situation, another stock to reinvest his earnings and then some. And he will every single time because they're fucking addicted. And then you just keep doing this again and again and again. Meanwhile, he thinks he's getting shit rich, which he is on paper. But you and me, the brokers, right. We're taking home cold hard cash via commission, motherfucker.
Sorry, I just had to do that because I love that movie and McConaughey's hilarious. Anyways, Chris has a great take on owning and purchasing real assets, which is why I played that clip, and how he preserves wealth all the same, if not better, than traditional investments, and by far and away better than cash sitting by itself in a bank account. So I hope you guys enjoy the conversation. Chris, thank you so much for coming on and being a part of the podcast. I believe you're actually one of the first guests I've had on the podcast to talk specifically about investing with. So I'm really excited about that, considering I love investing so much. I know you've recently wrote a book called Get Off Your Ass and Manage Your Money, Why You Need Alternative Investments, which before we get into that book and your alternative investments and financial knowledge, can you walk us through a bit of your background before the book leading up to now?
Yeah, well, thanks to you. First of all, thanks for having me on. Happy to be here. Hope that I can provide some value and maybe some little entertainment to your audience.
Sweet.
I used to be, like most people, a conventional investor, and that means investing in stocks, bonds, and mutual funds through your employer's 401k, what I fondly refer to as the 401k highway to mediocrity, with retirement so far away that you need a telescope just to see it. So I was that guy. That's what I grew up with. And then around 2009, in my mid-40s, I had this huge illiquidity event where I lost 55% of my assets and thousands of dollars of per month in cash flow. And in my case, it was divorce. And lots of people can relate to that, whether it's divorce or whatever, you know, kind of thing happens. And so all of a sudden, that highway to mediocrity was looking even worse than it was before. And coincidentally, around that time, a friend of mine said, "Hey, Chris, you got to read this book. You got to read this book." So I bought the book, and I just set it aside for a while, for way too long. And then one day, I was flying somewhere. I said, "Okay, I'm finally going to read the book." And the book, of course, was Robert Kiyosaki's Rich Dad, Poor Dad. And, like millions of others, my mind was open to a new way of thinking about money and investing. And so I did that pretty aggressively, and lo and behold, 9 years later, I had made up that 55%, multiplied it many times over, and I fired the man. I never have to work again if I don't want to. And so I wrote the book and started the blog at theprolificinvestor.net to share just, there's this completely other way of thinking about money investing that is so much better, so much more profitable, and it'll get you to retirement, financial freedom, whatever, much faster. It is harder, but the benefits are so worth it. So that's kind of my story.
Yeah. So what was the career that you had to enable the alternative investments?
Yeah, so if you've read Robert Kiyosaki's book, The Cash Flow Quadrant, I was an E. I was an employee. I grew up with a family of E's. None of us were entrepreneurs. It was just plain Jane vanilla stuff. And so that's what I knew. I went to Embry-Riddle Aeronautical University in Daytona Beach, Florida, to become an airplane mechanic, which I did. And then I worked at the Kennedy Space Center about the time the first shuttles were going off. And then I moved out to Seattle and worked for Boeing. At the height of my career, I was the director of contracts out there. And I wrote and negotiated the contracts for the sale of commercial airplanes all over the world to airlines and one royal family. So it was it was a lot of fun. It's easy to look back. It's easy to look back at a job, on the last few years or whatever, and it sucked, or whatever. But when I look at the whole time, it was really fantastic, and especially the contracts job was like an MBA on steroids. You couldn't learn what I learned, in a classroom, and I've traveled over 30 countries and just met people from everywhere and done big business, big dollar business, and tough negotiations, and it was just a blast.
So I talk a lot about travel in this podcast. Before we dive into the financial stuff, what were some of the highlights of your travels, maybe like your most favorite? Can you just walk us through that?
Oh, sure. Yeah. Walking on the Great Pyramids, on safari in Africa, walking on the Great Wall, just being in Mallorca or the Maldives. I've been on just the most beautiful beaches all over the world. It's just incredible. And Hong Kong's my favorite city. I lived in China for 3 years. And I loved I've probably been to Hong Kong like 50 times, and so I love going. There's just such an energy, about that place. So yeah, I'm ready to if we get back to some kind of more normalcy in terms of international travel, I'm ready to get on the road again.
Yeah. And just veering off a bit here, has it been more difficult with Hong Kong in light of recent events?
I haven't been there since COVID. So I went back. My daughter was living in Seoul. And so my girlfriend and I flew up from Seattle up to Vancouver, got on a brand new 787, flew into Seoul, spent Christmas there, and then flew over to Hong Kong on the 747-8 and had New Year's Eve in Hong Kong. But that was probably 2017, maybe. So I haven't done any international travel since then. It's all been domestic on motorcycles and Corvettes across the U.S.
Well, there you go. That's not too bad, though. There's worse places to be stuck.
Not a bad substitute.
Yeah, cool. All right. Well, getting to your book, Get Off Your Ass and Manage Your Money, Why You Need Alternative Investments, you designed a pyramid of how you recommend investment allocations. And in the shadow of the pyramid is traditional investment, stocks, bonds, mutual funds, etc. Can you elaborate on why you've thrown those specifically into the shadow of that model pyramid?
Yeah, it's a little bit of humor and making fun at conventional investments, because you know you're in the shadow, you know, the pyramid, you're talking about, call it a pyramid or ladder, it's something you get on and you climb. Well, the conventional investors aren't even on the ladder; they're in the shadow where it's dark and damp, and there's just no fun down there. There's nothing good happening down there. You know, there's mold growing. You know what it's in when you're in the dark and the shadow. So you gotta, all the good stuff happens on the pyramid. You gotta get on it and start climbing, and the sun comes out and the air is cleaner and there are ROIs are better. So it's a little bit just kind of, I think it's true, but just a little bit of making fun of the whole situation.
Oh, yeah. And when you've walked on the pyramids yourself, you know, why not?
There you go. Oh, and I want to correct one thing you said there. So all those different investments that are on the pyramid, that's not an asset allocation. Those are just examples of alternatives, and they're not in any particular order or anything. You could start on that pyramid at the middle or the top or anything. So,
okay, cool. One thing in your book that I really wanted to question you about was the concept of a family bank. Or I don't know if that was actually in your book. It might have been on your website. Can you walk us through the formation process of this bank, kind of who qualifies and the concept in general?
Yeah, well, it's way easier than that. So there's a good statistic that I have that about 34.5% of the average American's income goes to interest to other people. So think about that. I mean, if you're making $100,000 a year, $34,000 is going out to credit card interest, student loans, home mortgage interest. So that's a huge amount. So what if you could bring that? What easier way would there be than to just keep that interest inside? So a family bank is nothing more than opening up a checking account or a savings account, or taking an account that you already have that you don't really use. You know, some people might have a couple of savings accounts and they don't really have activity. So you designate one of these accounts as your family bank. And then you start to fund that bank. And you can fund it with, oh, I've got an extra $1,000 or an extra $5,000 or $10,000. Or you can just start by setting up a recurring automatic deposit into that bank. And then pretty soon, all of a sudden, you've got, let's say you've got $5,000. All of a sudden, you've accumulated $5,000 in that bank. And maybe I'm dating myself here. And then your first child, you know, turns 15 or 16, and they need a car to drive. Yeah, today you probably can't get much of a car for $5,000. But back when I was younger,
used car.
Yeah. So you go, okay, instead of going to the bank to get a loan, you withdraw that $5,000 to pay for that car, and you set up an amortization schedule just like you would. Now, what's the going rate for used cars? You go to your credit union banker and say, oh, it's about four, whatever, it's 4%, and you can do it for 60 months. So you start paying yourself back at that rate, or, you know, whatever the monthly payment is, but you set it up. And so now you're keeping that interest that would have gone to somebody else to yourself. And it's no more complicated than that. And so some people would say, you know, the question would be, well, if I could pay cash for it, why wouldn't I just pay cash? Well, so if you pay cash for it, the interest, let me back up. If you have a loan to a bank, you will find a way to make those payments, right?
Mm-hmm.
But if you pay cash, the money that you save in interest, you'll never end up saving that anywhere. It'll just get spent. So by mm-hmm. paying yourself back, you put that principal in interest, and pretty soon now you've got your $5,000 back. And with interest, all of a sudden you've got, you know, $8,000, and the next big expense comes along. You need a roof on the car, you need a new washer and dryer, whatever. And all the money that comes out of that account comes out in the form of a loan that gets paid back on some schedule.
Okay, so it's kind of like a financial discipline strategy, essentially.
Yep. 'Cause
you are, I guess, in one way paying that cash, but you're just structuring the loan yourself, correct?
Mm-hmm. Right, yeah.
Okay.
It's all, yeah, there's no, there's, you know, it's a little... There is no third party separate bank. It's just an account, and you borrow money from yourself. And think about this. I mean, if you were a young family starting off with kids, and you started doing this from the very beginning, I mean, you know, you start off financing little things, and you're doing cars, and you get a boat or whatever. And you know, my daughter is a therapist out in Las Vegas, and she's self-employed. So, you know, her she's not a good candidate for a loan because she's got some flexible income. Well, you know, what if I'm to the point where she could come to me and say, Dad, I'd like to buy this $250,000 condo. Can you be the bank? And so, and I could, you know, I could arrange that, give it enough time. I could, you know, put that money aside. But really, it's not loaning her money at the typical 30-year fixed rates really isn't a good investment for me because I can get some more. But I'd say, okay, here's the deal. It's on a 5-year balloon. So in the next 5 years, you need to get your credit and everything in order so that you can refinance and take me out of this loan, right? But wouldn't it be great if, think what that would do over generations if you just kept all that money in the family.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, financial discipline and just that strategy itself, that's so important in regards to money because that's really all it is, is discipline.
Yeah, right.
So one of the things you also talked about in your book that I really want to talk about is passive income. And I love passive income strategies. One thing, though, I've never considered that you actually talk a lot about was ATMs.
Yeah.
It's something that you reference it quite a bit. For those who might not be aware of this idea, can you elaborate on it a bit for us?
Yeah, So let's talk about something called a syndication. So a syndication is just where I would like to buy, you know, that $40 million apartment building, but I don't have $40 million or I don't have the $10 million down payment that I need to get the loan. So I go out and get a hundred guys and or gals, whatever, investors, and we each put in, you know, some amount of money. And we form a company and we go buy that thing together. And now we all get the benefits of the ownership. We get the pass through tax benefits. And you can do a syndication for anything. You could buy a shopping mall. You could buy an apartment building, or you could buy ATM machines. And so, so I own ATM machines all over the country. I've never seen them, never touched them, never will. They are all managed by a third party. And there are three players in the ATM space. So you've got the person that owns the real estate that you're going to put the ATM. So you got to have an arrangement with that person. And then you have the person that owns the ATM, in this case, me. And then you have the companies that do all the maintenance, insurance, and you know, putting the cash in the machines. And if they're not performing well at one location, they move them to another thing. So those are the three parties. And every time you go to an ATM machine and you pay that surcharge of, it's probably averaging around $3, you know, depending on your location, those three parties get some percentage of that fee. Now, if I owned these things directly and I was putting them in my pickup truck and moved them here and moved them there, I would get a different amount of money every month from each machine because there would be a different number of transactions. So the way that I do this or the way that I participate in this is, you know, I'm just wiring money to a company that's going to go out and buy these things. I have ownership of these things by serial number, and hundreds of ATM machines are all managed together, and I get what's called a blended return. So they look at all the stuff, and they say, look, if we meet this average amount of transactions across the whole thing, I can pay Chris this X amount of fixed dollars a month for the next 7 years. And it's a really great investment, and it started before COVID, and it just gives me a predictable monthly cash flow for 7 years. And at the end of 7 years, it's kind of a used car. It's like it's kind of outdated. You sell it for whatever it's worth, and then you move on. So unlike an apartment building, you don't have that produces cash flow. You don't still have this appreciating asset at the end that you could sell. This is a depreciating asset. So if you spend all the money that comes off of these ATMs for 7 years, you just have to know that, well, there's nothing left. That money's all gone, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, so for some of those seeking passive income, that's obviously a great route. And for the innovators out there, something that just popped into my head would be doing this with some kind of Bitcoin or crypto implementation where you essentially have the ATM, but instead of, you know, fiat currency, it would print out fiat currency, but you obviously would withdraw via crypto. Kind of a unique, innovative implementation. I know that they actually have those in Australia. I've seen a few. But I was looking at some of the returns, and obviously you have to give a lot to the people managing it. Do you think that there's, if people are interested in a side hustle, any potential in managing them yourselves?
Or yeah, is it just too yeah, much? No, there are certainly people that do that. That's not really passive income. Well, yeah. You know, it's already passive income. So you know, whether you, if you own, you know, if you own a piece of rental real estate, or if you own, you know, a portfolio of ATMs, however that many be, you've got a job, right? You've got a small business in running the rental or managing those ATM machines. So, and then there's nothing wrong with that. It just depends on whether you want to have a job or do you want to have what we used to call mailbox money or passive income.
I've never actually heard that term. That's great. Yeah. So shifting gears a bit, you released something else on your website that I really liked, and you said that Trump paid $750 in taxes and you paid zero, ignoring politics, obviously, because the mention of him is rough sometimes. But you said that 95% of the tax code is written to tell you how to pay less taxes by adding benefit to the economy. Can you elaborate on this?
Yeah, so there's a book that everybody should read. Well, let me back up. You know, if you're an investor, unless you know the average stock investor, the S&P 500 over its history has delivered about 9.8% average annual returns. It's routine for me to get returns in excess of 20%. And it's really weird when you think about it, but if you're getting 10% on an investment, you say, "Well, I'd rather get 20." How do you go from double the return on investment? Well, the easiest way is to keep more money in your pocket in the form of taxes. It's really it's the low hanging fruit, if you will. So, there's a guy named Tom Wheelwright, who a lot of people refer to as the smartest tax guy in the country, and he wrote a book called Tax-Free Wealth. And if anybody wants to know that is one book they should read. And Tom would say what I said, or I got it from him, I should say, that, you know, 90%+ of the tax code is telling people how to pay less taxes. The government uses the tax code to modify behavior. So, for example, the government thinks that having married people having babies is important for the country. So guess what? If you're married and you have children, you get tax breaks. You pay less taxes. They also feel that, you know, people to have a roof over their head, whether it be an apartment or a single family residence, is important too. So if you build or rent property, you get huge tax benefits in the form of depreciation. And now for one more year, 2022, something called bonus depreciation. So if I were to put $100,000 into an apartment syndication, I would actually get $100,000 negative on my tax return for that year. So the next $100,000 that comes to me of the same type of income is tax-free.
Wow. Jeez.
Yeah. So, and energy too, you know, the government, and it's switching from fossil fuels to more greener fuels. But the reason that I paid no taxes in that year is because I strategically made an investment in some coal processing units. And since the government, we need energy to run the country, like it or not. We need energy in some form. And so those people that go out and drill or refine, you know, petroleum products get some of the best tax benefits.
Do you think, is that still today? I know you said you did that a few years ago or whenever that was. Has that inverted into some kind of form of green tax benefit?
It's interesting that with all the talk that there is about green energy and solar and all that stuff, the tax benefits, to my knowledge, have never kept up, because investors will go where those tax benefits are. And so I think it's shifting, but I don't think it's quite moved all the way over in that direction. Although I was just listening to a podcast this morning, and it talked about how, you know, President Biden, you know, shut down the Keystone pipeline and it shut down some nuclear plants. And so he's really kind of putting a damper on the kind of the traditional energy sources, which is driving up energy prices, you know.
Oh, yeah. So. Yeah. I thought nuclear was zero emissions. Why would he be shutting? I mean, obviously, this is kind of going.
Yeah, well,
that's just shocking to me.
Well, you know, France has got, you know, I think France gets about 50% of their electricity from nuclear power. The United States gets a very small, you know, we had an accident here called Three Mile Island, like, you know, 40 years ago. And from that point forward, there was just no more building of nuclear plants. So it's really tragic.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, you know, there's some dangers to them, but when there's zero emissions and they're super powerful, but anyways, that's off into another topic in and of itself.
Right.
And a quick break from today's sponsor.
Hi, my name is Candace Smiley, and I'm the host of the Create the Ripple podcast, a place where we talk about trusting the needle and telling the truth. A place where whether we're interviewing amazing guests or you're hearing from me personally one-on-one, we talk about trusting the needle, so learning to listen to yourself and trusting what you hear, and then learning to tell yourself the truth or living out your truth out loud, on plan, on purpose, in total integrity. A place where we work to cut through the noise and offer you incredible value with each and every episode. Find previous episodes or connect with me directly at CandaceSmiley.com. Thanks so much.
And we're back. I'm curious to see what you think, talking about kind of the economy in regards to inflation in the next 10 years. Do you kind of see hyperinflation? And obviously this is speculation, but I just kind of wanted to pick your brain about it a bit.
Yeah, yeah. So I'll make the disclaimer that my crystal ball is as good as everybody else's. And, you know, I listen to lots of different sources of information and try to, you know, figure out how I'm going to do my investing based on what I think from all the things that I hear. And I don't think it's going to be universal. I mean, I don't think everything's going to go up in price or everything's going to go down in price. So when you think about, technology is doubling about every 18 months, and technology is all about delivering more to the consumers for less. So it's driving prices down. You know, I'm an older guy, and what used to be making or receiving, you know, long distance phone calls was inordinately inexpensive. If you were out in the yard and somebody called you, say, it's long distance. Get in here and get on the phone and get this over with, because it's costing us $2 a minute. So technology is driving down. So there's an incredible deflationary force through technology. And so, and that's because a lot of technology is also eliminating, you know, jobs, right? So that's one thing that's happening. And then another thing that's happening is the government is, with all the money printing, and it is pumping up asset prices in the stock market. So you got a deflationary force on one hand, and you got the government trying to push up asset prices. And so, and then you have market forces. So I'm a big investor in apartment buildings. And the value of apartment buildings and the rents are going up like we've never seen before, because there's a huge shortage of housing in the United States, whether it be single family rentals or apartment buildings. So I'm betting on that and putting a lot of money into apartment buildings. You know, it's unfortunate if you're a renter, but you know, the people that get ahead in the world are the people that own things, right? So if all you are is a consumer, and inflation is going up, then your buying power is just going down every day. But if you own the things that are going up in value, whether it be stock market or real estate, that is going to the positive side of your ledger. So that's a long way of saying I think it's going to be a mix, right?
Yeah, yeah. So I know that you had briefly said for a moment how you safeguarded your assets. Is it primarily then just the stock market in apartments, or is there any other alternative safeguards that you have? I'm assuming it's quite diversified, but any that you'd like to recommend?
Well, I've invested very little in the stock market. I mean, you know,
okay,
maybe like 1% of my portfolio is in the stock market. So I'm not a big believer in diversification. So my main investments are apartment buildings, ATM machines, self-storage, and believe it or not, whole cash value life insurance is a great foundational investment that I think should be part of every serious investor's portfolio. And everything I talk about, there's an article on my website about in one of the blog articles. So if you want to look in there, I got an interview with an insurance guy that puts together my cash value life insurance. I talk about the family bank, you know, there's the article about me paying zero taxes, how I did it and all that stuff. So the details are all out there.
Amazing. Yeah. And we'll obviously have all of your stuff, Chris's stuff in the show notes. And it also just goes to show that investments are a unique category, if you can even call it that, a unique asset that applies to a lot of different things in life. So while I'm in the stock market and in some alternative investments, you know, you're in all alternative investments. So it's crazy that there's no one way to win when investing. Something definitely to keep in mind. So moving on to alternative investments specifically, in your book, you said alternative investments require a bit more work than a conventional investment. Now, for the people listening out there who are kind of for that side hustle or looking for that, what are some cautions that you would suggest they know before jumping into the alternative investment space?
So, conventional investments are your stocks, bonds, mutual funds, ETFs, and all of those, all the things that are publicly traded. So in order to get your company or whatever it is on the stock market, it's a pretty rigorous process to go through the SEC and get listed on exchange. So the SEC has kind of done the vetting of the investment for you. So it's not that they're not bad players in the stock market. I mean, we've all heard what Volkswagen did with the emissions and Wells Fargo opening bank accounts, and there was Enron. So there, it does happen in the stock market, but it's easier to happen in the alternative space, because these are all they're mostly private deals that are completely unregulated. So, if somebody wants to set up a syndication, anybody who's got $15,000 to have a lawyer do the legal work to set up, you know, all the paperwork to do one of these syndications can say, hey, I'm a syndicator. Would you like to buy into my fund? We're going to go out and buy some apartment buildings. And then they run off with your money. So it's easier. That's something you got to be careful of. So you really have to pick and choose carefully. You know, if you're in today's world, if you get a job with an employer who has a 401k, in many cases, they will automatically enroll you in their 401k plan. They will pick how much of your paycheck goes into the 401k plan and which mix of, you know, stocks, bonds, and mutual funds you buy. You can't do that in the alternative space. There's no portfolio. You know, you have to kind of look at what's out there, figure out what's kind of a good match for your interest and your risk tolerance and that kind of thing.
So for that example, you said, hey, we have the syndicate and we want people to invest in apartment buildings and they run off with your money. Is there any way that if somebody was in that scenario, they can find a way to recoup that money? Or?
Well, I know of one particular situation where there was an investment that was a Ponzi scheme, and that, you know, the oldest trick in the book, and this guy was very good at it, and he was arrested, and he's in jail, and there are multiple lawsuits going on to recover assets of the investors. How that's going to work out, how much they're going to get back, I don't know. But, you know, it's usually not a very high percentage of what you invested. So, you know, it's really something that you want to avoid.
Yeah. And for any Ponzi scheme wannabes out there, maybe don't.
Yeah,
it's right. Not, you know. And I guess if you're interested on or don't know what a Ponzi scheme is, really quickly, it's pretty much a pyramid scheme. It's one top level investor gets some investors to find more investors, who then have to find more investors, all at the promise of an underlying business that isn't really anything besides taking money from the newest investor and paying all of the previous investors until it gets to a point where there's no more investors and they just happen to liquidate and quit their business operations that never really existed. So something to be aware of if the core of what somebody is trying to get you involved in is acquiring more people to invest after you're being acquired to invest, maybe red flags, steer clear. But anyways, moving on. So I'm curious to your approach on investing in small businesses as an alternative investment class. For those who might not be aware, are you assuming that an investor is already an accredited investor when approaching these small businesses, or
a lot of most of the stuff that I do requires you to be an accredited investor, and if your audience doesn't know, that means that they have to meet an income or net worth threshold, and it's a they have to have an income of $150,000 a year as a single person, or $300,000 as a married couple, and have an or have a net worth of $1 million, excluding their primary residence. And the reason that's an SEC thing, the reason that that's in place is because the SEC knows that these are unregulated things, and their thinking is that, well, we need to only let higher income or higher net worth people into these deals because they can afford the loss, or and maybe they're smarter, not necessarily. And so a lot of the private businesses that I have invested in have required you to be an accredited investor. The thing I'll say about, you know, the majority of small businesses fail. So my advice would be to make those invest. If you want to go down that path, you know, this is high risk, high reward with these things. So if you want to do that, I would do smaller investments across a number of companies instead of big investments across, you know, one or two or three companies, because if they all fail, then you're out. It's risky. And I made the mistake early in getting too kind of wrapped up in these new companies. And so I do it differently now than I did when I started.
Yeah, absolutely. What kind of process do you go through if you're interested in these small businesses in reaching out to them? How do you find them?
Well, the way that I found most of my investments is being part of some kind of investor mastermind or group. And I've been part of probably three of them over the past decade. And this is just, you know, somebody says, hey, we're a group of investors, and we're going to, you know, maybe it's in one case, it's a guy who has a podcast, and he also has a group, and you pay a membership fee. And we have biweekly Zoom calls, and we talk about what's going on with taxes and what investments are out there. And some of them are more focused on, you know, small businesses or real estate or whatever. So you've got to, you know, with all this is part of why it's harder with alternatives. You've got to, you know, put yourself in the right company in the right group. You know, you've got to, you've got to
do your due diligence.
Yeah, and you've got to. It's why it's so much harder, because I, you know, you have in my book, there's a checklist. There's a link that you could go to in the front of the book that takes you to an action guide. And I've tried to lay out how you kind of go from being a conventional investor to an alternative investor. And a lot of it is education. You've got to start reading books. You've started learning, listening to podcasts. And, there'll be seminars and classes. And you got to travel to different states and go to them. And, you know, over the course of time, you'll kind of figure out what interests you, and you'll meet people. And the most important thing to do is when you're getting ready to go into investment, you need to talk to other people who have done business with that fund or that company and see what their experience was. Because the guy or gal who's trying to get you into an investment, some cases they're salespeople, right? And you need to get referrals from other people that had positive experiences.
Yeah, really good insight there. And then just to maybe not discourage everyone, I think I was looking up this specifically for this question right before we got on here. And I think you can back me up on this. If you're a private company, you can take on 35 non-accredited investors before there's like a cutoff. Is that right?
You know, I don't know the details of that. I know that, let's just go back to the syndications. Some syndications will take a certain number, they will take accredited investors and a certain number of non-accredited investors, but that's kind of up to whoever's putting that deal together. In some cases, I think it's more expensive. There's more things that the syndicator has to go through to allow, non-accredited investors in. And I think sometimes the philosophy is, well, okay, why do I want to go through that? There's no shortage of accredited investors who want to invest with me. And then you have other people that are really like, look, I want as many people as possible to have access to this, and I'm going to go through the process so that I have a fund that anybody can invest in. And I've seen both of those models.
So I don't
know the answer to your question specifically.
Yeah, no, that's fine. I think that that's accurate, but I just wanted to maybe not discourage people who are like, dang, I can't invest now in small businesses. So.
Yeah, you know, even though I would say there are more opportunities and it's easier when you're a credit investor, there are other avenues for non-accredited investors. And look, everybody has to start somewhere, and it should be something that you aspire to. And
absolutely.
One of the ways in real estate is, you could go out and buy a single family rental or a duplex or a triplex and, manage it yourself and hire a property manager. Now you've taken on kind of a second job, or in throughout the country, there are what are called turnkey rental providers. And there are some really good ones out there. And what they do is they focus on a specific market and they go, okay, this is a great cash flowing market. Let's go out and build or acquire houses that we're going to sell to landlords. And so they'll go buy these places and they'll do the improvements and make them durable for tenants. And they have their own property management company. They'll put a qualified tenant in there. And then you show up with your down payment and your bank loan and you buy what's called a loaded rental. It's a rental that's already got a paying tenant in it, along with a professional property manager who specializes in single family rentals in that market.
Wow.
And that's the easiest way to get started. Now if you have a property management company, they're going to do all the kind of things, but there'll be some rules that'll be set up and something might be like, okay, any expenses under $500, pay them. Anything above $500, I want to know about it and have a say. So you're still going to be more involved than if you just wired your money off to a syndicator, but it's a way to start climbing up that ladder.
Yeah, absolutely. And then I know they have things like crowdfunding and stuff too, that is kind of becoming more mainstream. So talking about other alternative investments, I know you mentioned precious metals as one on your pyramid. Are you diversified in precious metals or not really? Is that not something that you...
Yeah, I like buying, silver and gold coins. And I have, and this is a really kind of amateurish way that I do it. I have a friend who's really into this. He follows this very closely. And when he thinks it's a good time to buy, he'll buy. And I say, okay, let me piggyback my order on yours. And it's almost more of a hobby. The coins are really cool. They're really pretty. It's nice to have them in there. And it is a good, if the zombie apocalypse comes, you'll be able to trade, stuff with your silver coins. So I do that.
Yeah. I kind of treat it the same way with my gold and silver allocations, mostly gold. I just like to buy it for the collectibles because, they're cool and then it's a safe investment, for later. And at the end of the day, I don't understand the mindset of owning a piece of paper which is backed by a gold company, but if a shit hits the fan scenario occurs, that piece of paper that says you own gold isn't going to be much different than the piece of paper that is the dollar. Like, they're not, if it's worst case, which is obviously unfortunate for everyone, you want that actual physical gold, otherwise as a hedge against inflation, sure, but otherwise don't expect them to take your piece of paper and return gold.
Yep.
Moving on to another alternative investment, which I've spent a lot of time and money. I'm not sure if you are well versed in this, is cryptocurrency. Before we dive into that, are you invested in the cryptocurrency? Is it something that you see moving forward in the near future?
Yeah. Yeah. I have a weekly trade. I'm very bullish on Bitcoin. I think it's here to stay. I think it's going to continue going up in value, and at some point it will stabilize. And so I dollar cost average in every week at a certain dollar amount, and that kind of goes up and down based on, how much I can afford at the time. But yeah, I think that's and I know there's money to be made in all of these altcoins, but that's kind of like day trading. And I'm an speculation, and I'm an investor who wants passive income. So I don't, and it, you know, day trading is just another job. Once you stop day trading, the money stops coming in, and I avoid jobs like the plague. So that's why I like buying the Bitcoin. And there's, I read a book recently called Layered Money, and this is really interesting. The guy, and I think this is his term, this is the way that he talks about it. He said, you know, forever, the only first layer money was precious metals, just to say gold and silver. And then when the United States was on the gold standard, you had a piece of paper, a dollar or a silver certificate, and you could take that dollar and exchange it for gold. Well, the gold was the first layer money, and the piece of paper was a second layer money. And with every other layer that's not first layer, there's something called counterparty risk. Somebody has to perform in order for you to get the value. And what he says is that cryptocurrency is the first layer money that has ever been around. Wow. Since gold. So this is a big, you know, once in a lifetime kind of change. And, you know, think about people, and some people are almost like evangelical about it, like it's the next coming of Christ, you know. And, you know, but you think about if you're in some third world country where the monetary system and the banking system is not very stable, you know, so you're trading your hard, your time for that currency, and that currency might be worth half tomorrow what it is on the day that you earned it. So anybody who's got an internet connection can now exchange, you know, their dollars and local currency to something that at some point in time, you know, will be more stable. So it's really gonna, you know, some people are thinking it's like a great equalizer in terms of financially across the globe. And, you know, if you want to carry your wealth from one country to another, or maybe you need to escape a country, you've got a thumb drive and you've got your whole asset base in there. So it's a real interesting thing. And, it's kind of like with the guy that wrote this book where he talks about, technology doubling every 18 months. You know, I feel like we're seeing things that in previous times you would see once in a lifetime. And we're seeing these, you know, so in our lifetime, we've seen the internet. Now we're seeing Bitcoin. I mean, things are compressing, and we're seeing life change.
Right before,
insane. I mean, I used to think my parents and my grandparents saw change in their lifetime, but it's nothing compared to the progress we've seen.
Oh yeah, and it's just becoming more rapid and rapid as everyone kind of understands the intricacies of building on the internet, I guess. Well, I was going to ask you to try to convince my friends or family that I've had a difficult time convincing to get in. I've told them everything I can about, you know, crypto in general, but it seems like you've already done a decent job on that. If you could, though, speaking of kind of the three most talked about aspects of the crypto industry being blockchain technology, kind of the decentralized nature and the store of value, which do you see those being the one that kind of maybe propels this industry into mainstream financial adoption?
Well, I think there's one more, and that is the fact that this stuff cannot be manipulated by anybody. You know, so even you know, if we end up having a U.S. dollar Fed coin, you know, with Bitcoin, the fact that there's only going to be, what is it, 33 million Bitcoins or whatever the number, I can't remember what the number is.
Yeah, it'll be just under 21 million, depending.
Okay,
on
so anyway, nobody can go in and manipulate the supply. So as people see what's happening with, you know, all currencies are being devalued, you know, every year by trillions. Governments printing more of it. And, you know, if you're just sitting on one way to guarantee that you're going to lose money is by not investing. If you just sit on your money, and I mean, having it even in a bank account, you're essentially getting zero. Well, you're in today's environment, you're actually losing 6% a year of
what
value.
What they say
yeah, right.
is 6%.
Yeah, right. And then the real number is something other in the upward direction.
Yeah. Yeah, because I think I've said this on a previous podcast, but they've increased the money supply by like 25% in the last 18 months. And that was a few months ago when I saw that. But but somehow it's only 6% that we're losing, you know.
But I'm going to go back to something I said before. But see, there's money to be made in every market cycle. So like I said, if you're just a consumer and you're spending, then you're getting killed by inflation. But if you go out and buy the assets that are going up, whether it's a supply and demand issue or it's because the government's manipulating the stock market, then you're benefiting from that. So you got to get on the right side of that equation, or the correct side, whether it's on the right side or left side, I don't know.
Yeah, absolutely. So lastly, is there a major difference in the timeline of an alternative investment compared to a conventional investment? And then kind of on top of that, additionally, is there a quicker or longer ROI or return on investment from those investments?
The ROIs are higher. You get your money back. You get your principal back quicker. I'll give you one example. So I invested in probably 3 years ago or so. I invested in an apartment building in Atlanta, Georgia. And that apartment building is going to be sold this year. So the average annual return on my investment is 24%. So take something and say, okay, 24% compounded, 24% compounded for 3 years. How much quicker are you getting to where you want to go? And how much quicker are you building your wealth when you're getting those type of returns? And that's before you consider that piece of real estate came with depreciation that was passed on to me. So a lot of the income that's coming back from that, I can actually tell you that I will pay no taxes on that.
Wonderful. Can you actually elaborate on that specifically?
Because when you buy let's say I'm making my first $100,000 investment in an apartment syndication, and I have bonus depreciation of $80,000. So that means that the next $80,000 that comes to me from apartments is tax-free. Well, the first couple years, I'm not getting a whole lot of income from that investment. So that $80,000 it's just a bucket that gets carried forward to the next year and the next year and the next year. And so now I've got this big buildup of unused depreciation. And when this investment comes in and I have $50,000 of profits, I subtract the 50 from the 80 that was carried forward, and I pay no taxes. And what you do is the way you keep that train, we call it the golden hamster wheel, right? So how do I keep that going? I just continue to invest in new real estate every year and keep gaining depreciation that gets banked. And then as the profits come in, I'm just continually buying new assets to wash out the income that comes from the apartment buildings, you know, when they've matured and get sold.
Are there any other, I know you mentioned ATMs being one of them, any other major depreciating assets that you can use to implement that strategy?
ATMs have the same thing, and any type of real estate, you know, any self-storage, so any type of real estate comes with depreciation. I use ATMs, I just call it business equipment. So yeah. Business equipment comes with depreciation. You know, if you got into a situation where you were, I mean, if you bought a brand new pickup truck and it was associated with your business, guess what? You get depreciation. So hard assets, you don't get that in the stock market.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and that 24% annualized, which is, I love that number, over the last 3 years, that kind of just spells out the previous thing we were just talking about to a T of being invested in real assets while the government decides to print, you know, as much as they are. So, Chris, this has been amazing and extremely informative. I really appreciate your time. I do always ask one thing to all my guests. If you could take all of the knowledge you've learned throughout the entirety of your life and narrow it down into one thing and tell someone that one thing, what would it be?
Wow, that's a tough one. I would say have childlike curiosity. So if somebody's when somebody says to you, when somebody says to you, hey, it's possible to pay zero income taxes, guess what most people do? Too good to be true, not going to look at that any further. What do you mean you routinely get 20 to 30% annual returns before tax benefits? Sounds too good to be true, must be too good to be true, so I'm not going to do that. If I had had that attitude over the past 10 plus years, I would have left so much money on the table. So, you know, and that kind of goes along with being open-minded. Look, be curious about what's out there in the world, and don't just dismiss something that somebody tells you because it's so different than, you know, what you're used to.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be my one thing.
I absolutely love that. Sounds like coming from the mouth of a traveler, to be honest. Yeah. Well, Chris, thank you. Where can people find you or your book or get in contact with you?
Yeah, so if you go to the website at theprolificinvestor.net, there's a handful of ways you can interact with me there. There's a conventional wisdom quiz. So if you take this 10-question quiz, it'll ask you some things, and you know, they're usually yes or no, true or false, and you'll have your answers, and then you'll get my answers, and I think it'll be pretty interesting. There's a cup of coffee there, and you can schedule a free virtual 30-minute coffee with me. I set aside Thursdays, so if anybody wants to have a Zoom call with me and talk about alternatives, we can do that. There's 40-something articles on the blog site, and I'm on all the social media sites, and you can get to them from there. Some of the articles, I'll do a video as well, and sometimes I'll do a video in lieu of an article. And of course, right there on the screen is the flashing star that says, "The book is out. Get off your ass and manage your money. Why you need alternative investments." And that'll basically take you to an Amazon link. And if you go directly to Amazon, the quickest way is just to type in my name, Chris Odegaard, and that'll bring up the book quicker than if you type in "get off your ass and manage your money." It might take you a while to find it. But yeah, everything is at theprolificinvestor.net. And, you know, for people who think they want to make this move, that's why I wrote the book, to really kind of lay it out for you and explain it and give you an action guide that you can follow to try and to make your path a lot straighter and more efficient than mine was. So
yeah, absolutely. I've read probably about the first 40% of it, and it's very well written. So I'll throw that in there. Yeah, absolutely. I'll throw that in there along with some of the other books we mentioned as well, if anyone else is interested, and then along with the website. So
yeah, and please leave a review.
Absolutely. Chris, thank you so much. I appreciate your time, and thanks for coming on.
That was great. I enjoyed it. Thanks a lot, you.
And that wraps up another episode. If you guys like the show, Spotify actually recently released a rating system. If you want to take 1 second and click 5 stars or whatever you prefer, it would be greatly appreciated. And same goes for Apple Podcasts. Although their reviews take longer than 1 second, it definitely helps the show a lot. Otherwise, if you do like the show, share it with a friend, maybe just one episode or the entire show. Either way, we're okay with it. Speaking of the show, of course, I'll have experts on and I'll thoroughly research before each episode, but it's your life. When you make decisions, that's your choice. In meaning, this isn't advice. Seek professional help for anything and everything, apparently, nowadays. But definitely don't rely on this show or blame it. I love disclaimers. Anyways, I hope you guys tune in next week, and until then, enjoy your life. And that wraps up another episode of Thoughts of a Random Citizen. Thank you everyone so much for tuning back in. For those who are new listeners, welcome, and I appreciate you joining. I hope you enjoyed the podcast and our guest today. If you are new and you're doing anything remote, be sure to check out Citizen Remote. It is fantastic if you're already traveling the world. It's a great app to join a very quickly growing community. It's a great tool for those who are just about to begin traveling and figuring out how to navigate that, especially if you work remotely. It's a fantastic platform, and we continue to build more and more tools for you guys week in and week out. Otherwise, if you're an entrepreneur and you're looking for tools or assistance with the next steps of, you know, what you need to do with your startup, or if you're looking for software development, network connections, reach out to us at Torque United. Otherwise, if you're just tuning in for the conversations, thank you. That's why I love doing what I'm doing. Keep tuning in, and actually keep a lookout for the not-for-profit that we're about to open up. You know, its main focus is going to be on international collaboration and helping build a borderless world, because it's something that I'm very passionate about. That's why I'm not only doing Torque United, but Citizen Remote as well. Really exciting stuff on that horizon. Please keep up to date with all of that stuff, the not-for-profit and entrepreneurial side of things at Torque United. But again, if you're traveling the world, check out Citizen Remote. If you're wanting to travel the world, if you're a remote worker, Check out Citizen Remote. Check out the app we've built for you guys. Check out the platform we've built. It's only growing every single week. So hopefully you guys will take part in that with us. Otherwise, I will speak with everyone in a fortnight. Until then, cheers.